You are on the line, live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn and Opelika on ESPN 106.7. Listen online at foxsports983.com or espnau.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Levi Fitzwater. Join the show by calling 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Levi Fitzwater on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. Hope everybody's having a great Tuesday afternoon. Thank you for joining us once again. Levi, how you doing today, my man?
Doing good. Ready for another great show today. We got a lot to talk about. Auburn taking on Vanderbilt tonight. You got Alabama in action as well. Just a lot to talk about.
The number to call into the show as phone lines are open, 334-321-1390 or toll-free at 888-382-7502. Also, follow Levi and I on Twitter, at Point Gardner, at Levi Fitzwater. You already mentioned it, Auburn basketball taking on Vanderbilt at 7:30 p.m. tonight on SEC Network. We've been saying now for two games that it's a bounce-back game for Auburn. It's no longer a bounce-back game for Auburn. This is a jumpstart a battery game for Auburn. This car's dead right now, and somebody has got to get this thing jump-started. Someone get the cables, let's hook it up, and let's go. Somebody's got to resurrect Auburn right now and get this car back on the road. Auburn at 10-10 overall, 4-7 in conference play, have lost three games in a row. It's no longer a bounce-back game. This is a game where you have to snap a losing streak before this season gets away from you. Auburn definitely not wanting to go back to the days of having losing records in basketball, and I think this team's much better than that.
Yeah, this is a game that you absolutely cannot lose. I mean, you're playing Vanderbilt, who has not had a great year this year. Auburn, kind of in a bit of a spiral right now, not playing the best basketball. You'd have a lot of tough losses as of late. Man, you got to win this one. You absolutely have to win this one. This is like a make-or-break type of game, because if you lose this one, confidence is absolutely shot.
Well, it doesn't get any easier than this either, right?
That's the issue. It's like the other weekend when we were talking about that stretch of Missouri, Arkansas, Baylor, South Carolina. You had to win that South Carolina game, or you're going to be looking at a potential 0-4, 1-3 type of stretch going through those brutal four games that they had. This is what you got to do with Vanderbilt right here. You have to go in and TCB. You got to take care of business.
That's a great acronym. And this Saturday, Auburn's got to go to Rupp Arena and take on Kentucky at their place, a noon game on CBS. After that, they'll have Mississippi State at home, LSU on the road, Florida at home, and Tennessee at home before they wrap up the season on the road at 11th-ranked Alabama. That last four-game stretch, even you could stretch it out as far as the last six games and not include tonight, and just say everything after tonight gets extremely difficult. I think Auburn's got a good shot to beat Mississippi State at home. The LSU game on the road, that's going to be extremely difficult. Florida's been playing good basketball recently. They were ranked last weekend after they had beaten a ranked West Virginia team. Of course, they've suffered a loss since then that bounced them out of the polls. Tennessee, it's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get with Tennessee basketball or Tennessee football. But Tennessee basketball, they've got their great days and they've got their bad days. One day they could lose to Ole Miss 52-50. The next day they can beat Kentucky by 10 and beat Kansas, and they can beat some other good teams in basketball. Not saying Kentucky's a good team, but they did beat Kansas recently. That's why they're as high as 16th. You got Alabama, who, of course, is the cream of the crop in the SEC and probably only the only legitimate top 25 SEC team, maybe Missouri as well. I haven't been overly impressed with them, but those are your two top 25 SEC teams that do it on a consistent basis. Tennessee as well. It hasn't been consistent, but I think you can make an argument that they deserve to be a top 25 team. I don't think that they deserve to be as high as 16th when you lose to Ole Miss 52-50. But nonetheless, the point is proven there. Those games, Mississippi State on, even Kentucky this Saturday on the road just because of Auburn's experience in Rupp Arena, it's not easy. And this is one that you've got to go out and win. As you said, you've got to TCB, take care of business, or else things really can get away from you here. Auburn's at a crossroads, 10-10 overall. My question to you is, does this team finish with a winning record at the end of the year?
That's a tough one. I'd have to actually look through and see. I'm really worried about this game in particular, simply for the simple fact that Auburn has been bad on the road this year. 1-5. 1-5 on the road this year. The only win coming against South Carolina, who we can all assume not the greatest basketball team that they're playing right now. They did have a nice win against Florida somehow, but again, the road stretch going onward. I mean, Vanderbilt hasn't been great. It's a tough, it's a weird place to play. The gym looks weird. I mean, I don't know what they were doing when they built that place, but that's beside the point. You got at Rupp. That's been just a thorn in Auburn's side to go play up there on top of how bad they've been on the road this year. At LSU, another tough one. And then you got those two games, Florida, or those last three games with Florida and Tennessee, both at home, and then Alabama on the road. I don't know. I don't know if they could get a winning record. You have to win tonight. You have to beat Kentucky again. You have to beat Mississippi State again. And then you're going to have to steal one of those last four games.
That's right.
And I just don't see that happening.
The question we're asking folks at 10-10 overall, and we want to hear from you, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 883-827-5502. I also think we've already found our Twitter poll as well, so I'll make sure I get that up during the break. Find that on ESPN 106.7's Twitter account, at ESPN 106.7. The question we're asking everybody right here, there's seven games left. Auburn's sitting at 10-10. Just knock off the ones there. Auburn's at 0-0 right now. If Auburn's going to finish the regular season with a winning record, they have to go 4-3 over their last seven games. Is that possible? Yes, but you've laid it out already. You've got to beat the teams on there over this next three-game stretch. Those are the worst teams Auburn's playing. The next three games, those are the worst teams of this seven. Auburn's basically now going to have to snap their three-game losing streak with a three-game winning streak, and then they have to steal one against some of the top teams in the SEC. As you already said, LSU, Florida, number 16, Tennessee, and number 11, Alabama. I think they can take the game against Alabama and Coleman just because it's a rivalry game. Those two teams, typically the inferior team, will give the other team a run for their money despite where they're at in terms of that college basketball season, despite where their talent level is at, despite where they're playing at. They always give the other one a run for their money. Auburn this year has been the worst basketball team between the two, but I could still see them going into Coleman in the last game of their season. That's Auburn's championship game. I could see them going into that game.
That's exactly what I was about to say. I mean, that is their championship game. That's the last game that they're going to play, and you know that this team, who has not shown any quit all year, they're going to come out and play that game with a lot of fire as if it was the national championship, the SEC championship. That's their game. That's their season right there. And they want to go out on top with upsetting a ranked Alabama team, the best Alabama team we've seen in, you know, the past however many years. You want to go out on top and, you know, launch next season with a win like that. I think they can win that game. I think they can beat Tennessee if they catch Tennessee on one of those Tennessee-type games where they show up and they're just not.
That's so true. And that one's at home.
It's at home. It's one of those weird things where we might get the Tennessee that comes in to Auburn Arena and absolutely stomps Auburn. But
Florida's in the same boat, though. You look at Florida this year, they suffered recently a disappointing loss to South Carolina, 72-66, after being on a substantial win streak. They come off of beating West Virginia at West Virginia's place in Morgantown, 85-80, and that's a top 15 team right now. They come off of that game, and they lay an egg and lose at home, no less, to a losing record in South Carolina, 72-66. That does not sound like an attractive performance there by the Gators to only score 66 at home against a South Carolina team that was truly struggling this year.
If you'd have asked me if we would have been above 500 with a winning record two games ago after the Baylor game, I felt like it would have been a lock.
100%. It's the last two games for Auburn that has really put this into question for Auburn, because we all knew that the final stretch of the season was the most difficult stretch of the season for Auburn, with the way that the schedule shook up to have to play some of Auburn's biggest rivals in basketball in LSU, Tennessee, and Alabama, and then throw Florida in there, who has also been the boogeyman for Auburn basketball. There are a lot of boogeymans for Auburn basketball. Vanderbilt is too, 1-11 in Nashville, at Rupp. Auburn's fighting still a lot of its basketball history against some of these programs that they just traditionally, records-wise, they haven't looked that great against. Talk about a real boogeyman for Auburn basketball, Ole Miss. We talked about that one going into that game of just Ole Miss and Kermit Davis and Andy Kennedy. All those coaches at Ole Miss, those guys just seem to have Auburn basketball's number. And Auburn had as much of a 14-point lead on Ole Miss, and Ole Miss still comes back. And guess what? The ghost of Devontae Shuler comes in there and splashes it in overtime and steals away the victory in Auburn Arena. Auburn had two very winnable games at home this week. And I'm not trying to harp on it, run the negatives, or railroad this team, because I still think this is a really talented basketball team. I'm more on the side right now of the spectrum that is believing that Auburn's probably going to finish with a losing record this season. And it's just now occurred to me, this moment on the radio, that that's going to happen. Auburn went from being two games out of second place at the start of this past week against Georgia. Literally a week ago, Auburn went from over a seven-day period from being in position to finish number two in the SEC. They were two games away from that. Had everything in front of them, had momentum. And now, with seven games left, they are also just as close to the precipice now of having a losing record.
It's wild. It's wild to think about that.
That's this year's SEC, though. You look at the standings, this has been such a
wildly inconsistent top 100%. To bottom.
You talk about what Florida, what Tennessee are we going to get? It's beginning to be that for me with Alabama.
I was about to say. I was about to say, even Alabama has shown inconsistencies at times, and that's the best team in the SEC by far.
LSU is another team. Which LSU are you going to get? You're looking at a clump of teams in the SEC standings right now where you've got four squads at the moment that are 6-4. Missouri's at 6-3. Arkansas opens up, goes into SEC play undefeated, and then they go like 2-4 over their first six SEC games. Arkansas, another team that I think now is flying in under the radar because they've seemed to have righted the ship a little bit since they beat Auburn a couple of weeks ago. That seemed to be the catapult game, the catalyst for Arkansas to kind of get off the floor. But you even look at Georgia and Ole Miss. They started out the years bad, but now they're actually on a bit of a streak themselves at 12-6 overall for Georgia, 10-8 for Ole Miss. Auburn has now fallen to the cellar, and I don't know if you can explain it any other way, but Auburn right now, wins and losses tell the story. Auburn's 4-7, and although we say that Auburn is more talented than the Mississippi States, the Ole Miss, the Georgias, that may be. I think Auburn's more talented than Kentucky. I think Auburn's more talented than South Carolina. While Auburn may be more talented than those teams, the losses to Georgia and Ole Miss are telling the story right now. Auburn is a bottom-of-the-pack team in basketball right now, and they have to turn it around. And it's got to start with at least the team that's below you in the standings, at least one of the teams that's below you. And Auburn even lost to A&M below them. So, like I said, I'm not trying to railroad this team, but it is amazing to me to have seen how Auburn went so quickly from after that Baylor game, from the SEC Big 12 Challenge. Like, that's the turning point this season, is playing the number two team in the country. I don't know what happened in Waco, Texas. Might have to call it Wacko, Texas. I don't know what happened out there, but something wacko happened, and it turned this Auburn basketball season completely upside down.
They used a lot of effort in that game. That's the only thing I could express, is they probably went into that game and just, I think they truly believed that they were going to win that game. They're up at halftime, and I think when they took that punt from Baylor, it just does not seem like this team has gathered it back since. Like, absolutely since that stretch of, what, about 6 minutes at the start of the third quarter, it does not seem that Auburn has been 100% right since then. And they were stretching in the Ole Miss game that I think they looked a little bit back. But then it comes back on them and they give up a lead and lose that game anyway. I just think that ever since that stretch against Baylor, where Baylor just absolutely blindsided them, shell-shocked them, whatever you want to call it.
Was a 6-minute period in that ball game.
They just have not been right since. And I mean, again, even with the Ole Miss game, they had a little bit of a stretch where you think they're in control of that whole game.
Auburn was up by 14.
You think they're in control of that whole game, but then it just seems that maybe the ghost of Baylor sneaks back up on them and they're like, whoa, hey man, we're still not right. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a mental thing. I don't know if it's bad practices throughout the week. I don't know what it is, because it doesn't seem quantifiable in my head right now, outside of the fact that, I mean, statistically we can go through and tell you why that they're losing, but it feels more mental aspect of it in certain regards with some of the teams that they are losing to.
It's like playing a video game that's on a level-by-level basis, and Auburn only had so many lives left, and then Baylor knocked them off. Baylor was the boss battle that set Auburn back, and now they're back at level one. It feels like Auburn has gone from all the work that they put in leading into that Baylor game of digging themselves out of the 0-4 start, and now seems like they've reverted to square one. And that may not be a bad thing, because you talk about some of the comments that were made after the Georgia game. I think Chris Moore was the one who said that well, we didn't take them as seriously as we should have after we beat them at their place so bad. And I think that this team, and I say that this team, you can't make the excuse for them anymore that they're young. You can't make that excuse because they're not young anymore. While they may still be freshmen and sophomores primarily, they've played a full season, they've gained a lot of experience. While they may still be young in age and in collegiate year, they have to begin to learn, right? And I think a valuable lesson that they're learning. I don't think that this Auburn team is taking any of these losses lightly. And I don't think that they are not learning. I think they are learning. And I think the valuable lesson that they may be learning right now, it kind of felt like as soon as Sharif Cooper came back out, things got a little bit easier for Auburn, right? And then you talk about the comments that were made after the Georgia game, like they didn't take him as seriously. Like it kind of felt like, well, hey, you know, that things are going easy for us. Not that things are getting handed to them, but they maybe thought that they were getting the hang of things. You never can think like that. Play with confidence, but you got to take everybody seriously, and everybody's going to give you their best. And this is a full season, right? And I think they're learning a little bit more about going a full year and having to stay on their toes for every single game. I don't think the Ole Miss game was anything about effort or enthusiasm or anything, or even energy. I think Auburn had rebounded from an energy standpoint after that Baylor game, to your point that you were making. I think the Georgia game was an energy thing, like they used all of that against Baylor. I just think some old habits reared their head back in that Ole Miss game, like turnovers. I mean, look at the turnovers down the stretch for Auburn. That helped Ole Miss get back into the game. Sharif Cooper not scoring for times on end, possession after possession, you know, having 9 points in that first half and then not scoring till well late in the second half. That can't happen. It just felt like Auburn went on a lull offensively in that game. Ole Miss was able to assert themselves a little bit more defensively in that second half. So I don't think it was anything about energy in the Ole Miss game as it was in the Georgia game. I think the Georgia game was energy. Ole Miss, I think it's more about just some old habits reared their head, which goes back to the analogy that I just made. It kind of felt like Baylor hit the reset button and sent Auburn back to level one. And now they're at level one, and they've got to go back. They've got to start climbing again if they want to finish this season strong, because there's a lot of excitement going into next year, and this team can't mail it in because there's nothing to play for at the end of the year. You're playing for next year. You're playing to improve. There's still something to play for, and I think Bruce Pearl has done a good job keeping this team engaged. But tonight, you know, the big question, and we'll talk about this later on in the show. We're about to go to break, but the big question here about Auburn basketball is, you know, I just brought up what are they playing for and everything, and how do you keep them engaged? This game against Vanderbilt, although Vanderbilt may look subpar comparing the two teams' talent, and it's hard to show improvement when someone's less talented than you, because you're like, did the blowout come because you're more talented than them or because you truly improved, right? It's like spring games and everything. Is this team really getting better? It's hard to tell. What is your measuring stick? But if Auburn... it's at least a step in the right direction if Auburn wins this game. You can't lose this game, right? Like, you have to win this.
Absolutely cannot lose this game.
It is a must-win game for Auburn in terms of improvement moving forward. You can at least say Auburn checked the box that they won the game. If they lose it, you can say that no improvement took place whatsoever. And it kind of makes me wonder how this year's going to finish, because there are not any more gimme games after this one. I wouldn't even say that this one's a gimme game. Auburn's 1-11. And their last 12 in Nashville. So there's a lot of work to do for Auburn tonight, and this is one that they have to take seriously. Just because 1-7 Vanderbilt is the team you're playing in conference play, you got to take them seriously. More of On the Line on the other side of this break. We'll have more college basketball talk coming up, and in about 10 minutes, we'll have Jason Caldwell of Inside the Auburn Tigers and Auburn 24/7 to talk with us as well about tonight's Vanderbilt game and more. Some Auburn baseball talk will be coming up with him as well. We got a lot coming your way here on the Line. Stay with us. You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Levi Fitzwater on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. Phone lines are open. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Call in while you can. Jason Caldwell of Inside the Auburn Tigers and Auburn 24/7 will be joining us in our next segment at about 2:30. So make sure you get on the phone lines with us. Once again, the number to call, 334-321-1390. Or toll free at 888-382-7502. Find the show wherever you get your podcast. Also, keep up with all of the content the show is putting out on RadioAlabamaSports.net and on the Radio Alabama Sports Facebook page. Follow it on Twitter as well at @RadioALSports. It's the place to be for Auburn and Alabama content as well as high school sports content. Once again, that's RadioAlabamaSports.net. Levi, I want to check with you now. Still talking about this Auburn-Vanderbilt basketball game tonight. Hit me up with what's going on with the betting lines. You said there wasn't a whole lot of activity yesterday. What's going on now that we near tip-off, about 5 hours away?
Still not looking like much. I mean, it's still sitting around that 5.5 point line. It just keeps kind of going back and forth. Most people are on the Tigers is what it looks like to me. So I'm not really seeing
nothing
anything
sneaky about this.
Yeah, it's not seeing like anything is really kind of overwhelming.
I wouldn't expect many people to bet against Auburn on this one.
It's about 65% to 35% right now from the chart that I'm looking at. That always scares me. You know, I always talk about it anytime I see, you know, anything above 60% going one way, that usually kind of throws a red flag that something might be up. The line looks very generous. I would think that Auburn probably should be favored around 6. So, I mean, I know that's only a half-point difference, but that half-point difference can make a lot. I think 6, 6.5 is probably where Auburn should be in this game. I think a lot of the fact of where this line sits comes from Auburn struggling on the road, again, struggling in Nashville in particular, and I think that's where we see this kind of line come from.
The over-under has dropped 2 points since yesterday. It's down to 155.5, so folks expecting this game to be in the 70s, I would say, is kind of what you're looking at here right now. But Auburn-Vanderbilt, you know, here's the thing with the betting line there and the spread at 5.5 favoring Auburn. Auburn will not win this game by less than 5.5 points. They will either lose or they will win by more than 5.5. I think those are your two most likely outcomes. Auburn will either lose. You know, when has Auburn this year won something that close, less than 5 points? I mean, let's go and look at the schedule. I mean, obviously, Auburn out the gates against St. Joseph's, 1 by 5 again. So let's hold this to a 5.5 line and see how many times it's here. I don't know the answer to this. This is just a question that has popped into my mind, so I may be wrong. But it doesn't seem like Auburn has won too many games where it has been decided by less than 5.5. It's happened against St. Joseph's. That was a 5-point win out the gates. It has happened against Memphis. That was a 3-point win. It has happened no other time this year. It's happened twice.
I was about to say, I think that was it. I think those are the only two times that's happened.
Two of Auburn's 10 wins this year have came when Auburn has only won by 5 or less. I don't think that Auburn has tended to shrink this year when it's came down to those crunch time moments. I would say the few games this year where we have not seen Auburn shrink, Kentucky, Auburn closed it out in a tight, close ball game where they had to put a team away. They did so well against Missouri as well. Those are the only two that I think you can say in SEC play. Memphis, earlier in the year as well, I think they did a very good job. And it seems like an eternity ago that it was Thanksgiving and we were watching Auburn St. Joseph's play. So that seems like forever ago. But you talk about the Memphis, Kentucky, and Missouri games. Those are the ones to me where I felt like Auburn did not shrink when it came down to crunch time at the end. And they had to make plays to close out a ball game. They needed to make free throws. They needed to avoid turnovers. It felt like Auburn did that in those games. Outside of that this year, when you're talking about close ones where it's on the wire, Auburn didn't do well against Arkansas in the first meeting or in the second meeting. They lost to A&M close as well. They were never able to fully get back into it against Ole Miss the first time. This past game against Ole Miss, the second meeting, Auburn blows a 14-point lead. Alabama, the first time Sharif Cooper hit the floor, Auburn ended up, you know, staying around 2-3 points for the majority of that second half, and then late it gets pushed up to 6 or 8, and Auburn can't fully close that gap either, loses 94-90. Baylor stretched it out, obviously, into the 20s, so that one never really got close. And then the Georgia game, most recently last week, a week ago, Georgia held a substantial lead, at least an arm's length lead away for Auburn. It was about 10 for the majority of the ball game, and Auburn could just never quite clip into it. They get back to the end, and it's relatively close, and they, once again, turnovers and not being able to get a stop keeps Auburn from being able to get over the hump. So that's why I don't think Auburn wins this game close. I think Auburn either wins by, you know, 6 or more, 8 points, 10 points, somewhere around there, which I think is the more likely of the two than Auburn losing. I'm taking Auburn to win this game. I don't want people to misconstrue what I'm saying. But if we're talking about the way that this line looks right now and how that compares to how people outside of the community are viewing this game from a national perspective, I don't think, you know, that's basically the bet it's trying to make you make. Is Auburn either going to lose or win close, or is Auburn going to win by a substantial margin? And I'm going to say that Auburn will cover, win by more than 5.5, probably win somewhere around by 10, I think, or maybe even more. Maybe Auburn straightens it out tonight. I really like this matchup for Auburn going into this game. I think they hit all of Vanderbilt's weaknesses with strengths themselves.
I agree
so
with that, too.
I like this matchup for Auburn. I think Auburn really shouldn't encounter too strenuous of competition in the places where they want to execute their game plan tonight.
Yeah, and to steer the conversation away from, you know, the line itself, I do think that Auburn has a lot of strengths, to go off your point, that Vanderbilt simply has weaknesses in. And I think Auburn, one thing I want to see from them tonight, which I think would be crucial for them to kind of go in, assert themselves, and win this game, and really control this game throughout, I want to see them attack the inside. I want 100%. To see them use the inside. We hit on it yesterday. I want to see Jalen Williams go inside. I want to see Sharif Cooper go inside. I want to see that Vanderbilt defense have to shrink, have to collapse into the interior, and then give guys like Flanagan, give guys like Johnson open look opportunities, better chances to make threes. It hasn't looked pretty a lot this year with threes simply because I don't think they're getting good looks. They haven't made a lot of three-pointers per usual because I don't think they're getting good looks.
Vanderbilt's the worst team defensively in the SEC in conference play, giving up 82.1 points per game. They're last there, last in two-point percentage at 59%, and last in three-point percentage at 42%. More of On the Line on the other side of this break. We talk with Jason Caldwell of Inside the Auburn Tigers.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Back on the line, Noah Gardner and Levi Fitzwater with you on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. And as promised, joining us on the phone lines now, Jason Caldwell of Inside the Auburn Tigers, part of the Auburn 24/7 Network. How you doing today, Jason?
I'm doing good, guys. How about y'all?
We're doing great, and we appreciate you hopping on with us. Let's get into it. Obviously, there's a basketball game tonight. Auburn basketball taking on Vanderbilt. Both of these teams, Vanderbilt's been in a funk all season long, but Auburn basketball now in the midst of a three-game losing stretch. You know, obviously this isn't the illustrious matchup that we saw, you know, last week with Auburn-Baylor and Auburn-Georgia and even Auburn-Ole Miss. This is truly a bottom dweller against another team that's in the bottom third of the SEC as well. How do you expect tonight's game to go?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at it, and this is a team that's got to learn how to play defense again. And that's, you know, that's something that young teams – they run into at times. I think, you know, this seems, you know, they've had to learn how to, I think probably one of the biggest things is, you know, you hear it all the time, the freshmen kind of hitting the wall. Well, when you have a team full of guys that have never been through this before, you know, trying to figure out how to finish a season is important. And it's one of the biggest reasons why you look at right now in college basketball, teams that have experience that are veterans are the teams that have been doing the best this season, whether it be obviously Gonzaga, Baylor, but hey, look at Drake, look at the Belmonts of the world, people like that, teams that have experience. It's been such a big deal for them, and you know, for this Auburn team, they don't, you know, they had very, very little of that coming into this season. And part of the experience is learning how to go for the long haul, learning how to finish a season. That's something these guys are now learning the hard way. And we'll see if they respond, you know, in a place that Auburn has not had a ton of success of historically.
This was something that Levi and I were talking about earlier on in the show, and it just kind of occurred to us looking at the final seven games and considering that Auburn's sitting at 10-10 overall, you know, going into last week on Tuesday into that Georgia game, Auburn had a chance to finish as high as second in the SEC. I think that window's closed for Auburn, obviously, but now Auburn's really on the precipice of possibly finishing with a losing record this year, which is kind of hard to believe after where Auburn had battled back from to open SEC play. Do you think this team finishes, you know, in the green or in the red when it comes to the record at the end of the season?
Yeah, I think they'll have enough to finish with a winning record. But, you know, you look at it and considering that you probably, you know, you more than likely you're going to go through this season without your two best players ever playing 1 second of basketball together, then that would be that'd still be pretty wild to see, because I don't know that we'll see Justin Powell again this season. I think this, you know, there's no need to push that at this point to where they are by taking too long to get back. But if you don't, then you could play an entire year without your best two players and really your only two, you know, your only two ball handling point guard guys playing together with for not a second. So I think you look at it, and for me, it's been obviously a much different type of year, but it's one with where there's so much promise, and we haven't seen, and who knows if we'll ever see those guys play together, depending on what Sharif Cooper does. So that's it's an interesting take on this season for sure.
You had a baseball story out today on Inside the Auburn Tigers, and you see Jack Owen has sustained an injury. Kind of take us through what's going on right now with that Auburn baseball pitching staff within 2 weeks of the start. Actually, we're almost to a week away now from the start of the regular season.
Yeah, almost to a week away, yeah. The good news is they got tons of depth, and that's the big plus when you look at Cody Greenhill being back, Richard Fitz. I mean, you know, two of those three spots in the rotation are pretty much solidified, I think, when you look at that. And Mason Barnett's a guy that may be as talented as anybody. He's a guy that has Tanner Burns, Casey Mize type stuff. He only pitched in 8 games last year as a reliever. But he's a guy that has the ability to be a starter and to go out there and do some things. He could potentially be a starter going into the year. Could end up being a closer again this season. But, you know, I got a lot of options. Brooks Fuller's of the world and Carson Skipper. Joseph Gonzalez is a true freshman kid from Puerto Rico, the guy that they believe is going to be a big-time pitcher down the road. So that's the good thing is there's depth in this. Some of these guys may get thrown into the fire a little bit more because, you know, you think about the guys, you know, Mason Barnett, a guy like him, they never got to the SEC schedule last year, so he hasn't pitched in a game of that magnitude. The good thing is for this team is in week two, they get to go to Texas for the Round Rock Classic where they'll play, you know, Oklahoma. Texas A&M will be there as well, and Baylor. So they'll get to play an SEC-type series, even though it'll be against three different teams. So I think that'll be good for them in terms of their development.
Of course, you go through the depth of that pitching staff there, and I'm just curious who you think will be the Friday-Saturday guys for Auburn. It seems like now they got to go find someone for Sunday because Jack Owen was probably, I may be wrong here, he was probably the Saturday guy, and now they're going to have to bump up maybe Greenhill from Sunday. What does your Friday-Saturday weekend rotation look like?
Yeah, I actually think it may be Cody on Friday night.
Oh, wow.
I think Cody may be Friday night just because I expect Richard Fitz to be a guy that may go a little bit deeper. I think Cody's probably going to be a 5 or 6 inning kind of guy. In that regard, I think you'd want your Friday night guy to be where you go closer, you know, have more Friday night and then be able to bring him back on Sunday. So my estimation would be that it'd be Cody Friday night, at least to start with, and then Fitz on Saturday. And I thought probably, Jack Owen probably would have been a Saturday guy. But I think now you look at it, Fitz Saturday and then probably – a Mason Barnett on Sunday, depending on if they want to bump him up into that starting role.
Who's the next guy after Barnett that you really think would be a Sunday guy if they opt to just keep him in that closing role?
It could be a guy like Brooks Fuller. Brooks has pitched a good bit. He started some SEC games. It's pitched pretty well so far, so I think Brooks Fuller could be an option there. You know, I mentioned Joseph Gonzalez, depending on if you wanted to kind of throw him out there as a freshman. He could be a possibility as well. So there's a couple of those guys. Trace Bright, a guy that pitched some as a midweek starter last year. My guess would be Brooks Fuller or Trace Bright would probably be the next two guys in terms of potential starters.
Switching gears now to football, and it's been about a week now since we found out about Devin Barrett moving back to the running back room. Auburn adds another body there with Jarquez Hunter a couple days after signing day also. This running back room now, at least it's got bodies in it. Take me through it, but first start with Devin Barrett. Obviously Tim Horton spoke to I think maybe it was Nathan King and said that he thought it was a great move, and it was nothing for talent that moved him out of the backfield. Does Devin Barrett have significant carries this upcoming season?
I think he could. I think you look at it, and my guess would be at a minimum he's your third guy. He's a guy that was a four-star running back recruit, and you're right. I think, obviously, looking back on it now, he's a guy that should probably stay there. But you look and you look, Noah Igbinoghi makes the move, and you go, mean, Devin's a guy that had so much talent that you thought, hey, we need to find a place to play. But it just never was a fit for him, a defensive back. I think he's a guy that could help a lot at running back. And that's a position where you could kind of jump in there and go. He's been working some, I believe, with Brad Lester in this offseason, trying to get ready to play running back again. And it just so happened that everything kind of the way it opened up, he's able to come back to Auburn. And so this spring will be big for him just to see what he can do, see how he does in working with Cadillac. And, hey, I mean, he'll get plenty of reps because, you know, there will only be three of those guys on scholarship in the spring. So he'll be a guy that will get everything he wants to see where he is.
Keeping on the subject of Auburn football, we've talked a lot about position groups going in this year. Do you have a position group that you think is the best in terms going into the season with the most potential and maybe one that's not so great going in?
I would say right now that I believe the corners, based on what those guys did last year and who's coming back, I think that cornerback group has a chance to be, you know, significantly better. When you look at Roger McCreary coming back, Nehemiah Pritchett did a good job. Get Jalen Simpson back healthy again. We saw Marco Domeo a little bit in the bowl game. So I think you start looking at a two deep out there corner. I think that's a pretty good place to start for this team. When you look at the positions, obviously, when you look at one that needs some help, I think offensive tackle is always where you're going to be pointing to, at least for the time being. The question for me is, you know, what do guys like Brendan Coffey and Killian Zaire look like? Following a full year at Auburn, Brendan Coffey got some playing time. Killian Zaire never was really healthy enough to go. What do those guys look like in the spring? Because they were guys that were both signed that were with the potential to be Auburn starting tackles. And, could one of those guys transition to be a true left tackle? Because right now I don't see one of those guys on Auburn's roster. They had Alec Jackson playing left tackle this year. I think he's probably right tackle. But may end up, he could be a guard maybe, but I think probably a right tackle would be his natural position. Can one of those guys work their way into becoming a true left tackle for Auburn? To me, that's a big question mark.
Last question before we let you get out of here. Signing day was last week, but Coach Harsin said they're not done yet. Is there any news on the recruiting front about maybe Dylan Brooks trying to get out of that national letter of intent at Tennessee?
Yeah, no, just waiting. I think, about another week or so for Tennessee. I think they have a 30-day window before they have to do anything. I think they're waiting it out to try to, for Dylan to change his mind and stay with Tennessee, which I don't think is going to happen. So I would guess that sometime in the middle of next week that we'll probably begin to hear some news from Dylan Brooks, and I would guess that Auburn would be the prohibitive favorite for him to wind up, on the plane.
Jason, I appreciate you hopping on with us today. Tell everybody where they can find all the great content you're putting out.
Yeah, you can check us out at eutigers.com, and can also follow me on Twitter at ITATJason.
I appreciate it, my man. I hope you have a good rest of your evening and a good time with some Auburn basketball tonight.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That was Jason Caldwell of Inside the Auburn Tigers and Auburn 247. Once again, joining us here on the Line today. If you missed any of that conversation, you can go and find that wherever you get your podcast. And we will be wrapping up hour number one of the show on the other side of this break. Stay with us.
On the Line on Fox Sports Central Alabama. On 98.3 FM and ESPN 106.7.
Wrapping up hour number one of On the Line, Noah Gardner, Levi Fitzwater with you. Once again, a big thank you there to Jason Caldwell of Inside the Auburn Tigers and Auburn 24/7 there joining us in that last segment. If you missed it, if you missed any of today's show so far or ever missed a show, go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Follow ESPN 106.7 on Facebook and Twitter to keep up with the latest going on at the station. On the Line, The Drive with Bill Cameron, analysis, news, and more. That's all on ESPN 106.7. Find the website on ESPNAU.com. Let's wrap up hour number one here, but first, let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight.
Hey everybody, it's Noah Gardner with What's On Tonight. College basketball gets started with number 11 Alabama at South Carolina at 5:30 on SEC Network. Also at 5:30, but on ACC Network. Syracuse is on the road at NC State. At the 6 p.m. time slot, roll out the struggling Blue Bloods. Penn State at Michigan State on ESPN2 and Arkansas at Kentucky on ESPN. Even Kent State and Bowling Green have better records than Michigan State and Kentucky, and they play at 6 on CBS Sports Network. At 7:30 on SEC Network, Auburn looks to snap a 3-game losing streak at Vanderbilt. At 8, bring out the ranked teams. Number 14, West Virginia at number 7, Texas Tech on ESPN. And number 19, Creighton at Georgetown on CBS Sports Network. Two NBA games are on TNT tonight, starting with the Rockets at the Pelicans at 6:30. At 9, the Celtics and the Jazz wrap up the night. I'm Noah Gardner, and that's what's on TV tonight.
It's a packed schedule for basketball tonight. Obviously, Auburn and Alabama playing on the same night, which that does not happen too often this season. I feel like there have been a lot of nights where one team has played on Tuesday and the other on Wednesday night in the midweek. Obviously, Saturdays, of course, but in the midweek, that has not happened too often. It is going to be a packed night in terms of college basketball in the state of Alabama this evening. Alabama, once again, on the road, taking on South Carolina. And then tonight, Auburn also on the road in Nashville, taking on Vanderbilt. I would say Auburn's probably in the more fun location going to Nashville than maybe going to Columbia. And that's not a knock on Columbia. That's more of just Nashville's a fun place, right?
Hey, I'll take a knock on Columbia. I'll take a knock on Columbia. But no, Nashville is just a fun place in general. But yeah, I'll knock Columbia.
Let me tell you. This past year, of course, Alabama played South Carolina, right? Or was it 2 years ago?
I think that was 2 years ago.
That is 2 years ago, right? Yeah, that was 2019. Excuse me. I've talked to several Alabama fans about this. Alabama fans have beef with South Carolina from their trip to them in the early 2010s when, well, I think it was Stephen Garcia. Yeah, Stephen Garcia and the Gamecocks pulled off that upset victory on Alabama, and a lot of them did not enjoy their stay.
That's funny you say that. My sister-in-law actually says the same thing about when she went in 2011, if I'm not mistaken, when Auburn played up there in Columbia and ended up upsetting them. She said she did not have an enjoyable time at all. She put South Carolina fans up there at the top of her list of, you know, fans that she does not enjoy when she goes on the road to watch them play. And I just think that's funny. I've never...
They're kind of on the peripheral, and South Carolina hasn't been overly relevant in football.
Maybe that's
since Spurrier, but even at the end of Spurrier, they weren't overly relevant. They were only relevant for, you know, like a 4-year window.
It does seem that trips to Columbia are not enjoyable by multiple fan bases across the SEC from what I'm starting to gather at this point. And that's shocking to me. I never really got that from South Carolina, but I guess that is a thing that...
Well, how often have you encountered South Carolina?
That is true.
Not often.
I really don't see that many fans. You know what? That'll be a thing that we should do. We should rank the SEC fans
That might offend some folks. But, you know, I went to the 2010 SEC Championship. There were some unruly South Carolina fans. There were. One of them called me a shrimp, whatever that means.
You just shrimp,
I know
boy.
What it means. They called me small. We were walking by. We rode in on like a, you know, a fan bus that came in, and so did they. But they were college students, and they had been enjoying some beverages. And you know, we're coming off. You know, obviously they want to yell at Auburn people. You know, and that's gonna happen. That's fine. That's all in good jest. And then I reared back with Nevada's ranked. You know, obviously this is young. This is a young Noah. I reared back with a Nevada's ranked higher than y'all. And I think Colin Kaepernick was their quarterback back then.
Yeah, he was that year.
So Nevada's ranked higher than y'all. They're like, let's get the shrimp. I was like, whoa.
I mean, they don't play apparently. They don't play in Columbia.
But those were college South Carolina students. So they're like, let's get the shrimp. I was like, oh man. and I was only in like eighth grade at the time when that happened. So, you know, but, Let's wrap up hour number one here. We've got plenty coming up in hour number two, though. We've got an interview with Robbie Weinstein of Vandy 24/7. And some folks out there may be wondering, why are you guys talking to a Vandy dude? Well, first of all, Auburn-Vanderbilt basketball tonight. We got some great insights on that basketball game coming up and what it's like from the other side of things right now.
Gives you a good perspective. You listen to us come up here every day and talk Auburn basketball, and we know Auburn basketball because we're from this area. We talk to guys like Nathan King, Justin Ferguson, You know, we just talked to Mr. Caldwell a few minutes ago. We talked to these guys that know Auburn. Now we're going to talk to someone who knows the opposite side, who can give us right. the insight on the other side, and not just from a basketball perspective, even from a Derek Mason-type perspective and what he's going to bring to Auburn.
Yeah, we get a lot of great insights. The interview's pre-recorded. We get a lot of great insights from him about what kind of coach Derek Mason is in the locker room. Also, he went into it on his own volition on recruiting, and he had some great things to say about him in recruiting for Auburn football moving up. So this is going to be – I'm excited about the conversation. We've got something good planned for you guys in the second hour. That'll be coming up at 3:30, so make sure you stick around for that. But let's wrap up hour number one here. Some NFL talk right now. Russell Wilson is the latest quarterback in the NFL to say that he's a little disgruntled. And this I don't know if I completely believe what he's saying. I don't know if I believe that he wants to leave Seattle. I think he really likes being the guy in Seattle, and I think he likes playing for Pete Carroll. But today, when he's asked if he's available in a trade, he said that's a Seahawks question. And he's also pointed out that he's a little frustrated right now with some of the personnel decisions and not having a whole lot of help right now in Seattle. This doesn't feel like the same type of situation as Deshaun Watson to me. This feels like more of Russell Wilson say, look, get it together or else we're going to have a problem. This feels more like a wake-up call for Seattle's front office than something actually legitimate that Russell Wilson wants to get out.
Well, Seahawks fans are disgruntled too. They're tired of seeing them bring in eight running backs and nine tight ends and just neglect the offensive line. And that's and Russell Wilson also mirrors that sentiment. He's tired of having to run around. You saw the greatest.
He's getting hit a lot.
You saw the best quarterback from an athletic standpoint that we have probably seen in our lifetime in Patrick Mahomes be nullified by the fact that his line was terrible in the big game on Sunday. I get it. I understand. I watch, be it that my brother's a Seahawks fan, I end up watching a lot of Seahawks football and keeping up with that a lot. They have to protect him. They really have to. And I mean, I don't know. You know what teams have the have good lines in the NFL, but I'm pretty sure that the Saints have a really good offensive line. You know, Cam Jordan,
says the guy wearing a Saints hat.
Cam Jordan, Andres Pete, a first, a second round for Russell Wilson. Who says no? I don't say no. I say you just bring him on in.
He has a no trade clause in his contract, and even he says he doesn't know if he's available or not right now. Look, you got a no trade clause. You're not really available unless you say you're available.
You're available. You're
so
only
it's
available.
Up to you, man. Like, and so when he says that, I don't really see. I'm saying I'm not buying it. I'm not saying that he's saying that he's ready to go.
I think he's more
saying, get it together, or else I will be.
Yep.
And the Seahawks better heed that warning, or else they're going to be reduced to rubble. Okay, you're gonna need him around in the future if you're going to win another Super Bowl. You're going to want to keep us around on your radio dial. Stay with us. We got hour number two coming up on the other side of this break on the Line.
You are on the Line, live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga and in Auburn and Opelika on ESPN 106.7. Listen online at foxsports983.com or ESPNAU.com. You are on the Line with Noah Gardner and Levi Fitzwater. Join the show by calling 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line, Noah Gardner and Levi Fitzwater with you on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM. Hope everybody's having a great Tuesday afternoon, 3 p.m., 1 hour in the books, and it was a good hour, and if you missed any of that hour, go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. You can find it on Apple, Google, you can find it on Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. It's at all the locations. So go and find that. Phone lines are open at 334-321-1390 or toll-free at 888-382-7502. Questions, comments, compliments, anger, we welcome it all. Bring the heat here on the Line. Find Levi and I on Twitter at Point Gardner, at Levi Fitzwater. In that first hour, talked a lot of Auburn basketball against Vanderbilt. Here at this hour, we've got a conversation coming up at 3:30 with Robbie Weinstein of Vandy 24/7. He'll take us through some of that basketball matchup, and so we'll save some of the basketball talk for a little bit later on in the show here. He'll take us through that. We've also got some great insights on Derek Mason as well coming in. What kind of recruiter is he? What kind of scheme is he going to run at Auburn? You know, what kind of person is he in the locker room? We get into the nitty-gritty of it with Robbie Weinstein of Vanderbilt 24/7. But we're going to open hour number two up here with a new series that we're going to be doing in the lead-up to A-Day. And we'll just kind of do this intermittently here through this winter workout period in February. Over these next 2 months, when we finally get an A-Day date, we will go through our predictions for Auburn's depth chart going into the A-Day game. Now, this is not our predictions for the regular season. This is our predictions for A-Day's depth chart, which is not going to include some of these enrollees recently that are not on campus. Now, there are some early enrollees already that are on campus, and those will be included, but we are going to do our depth chart prediction series and kind of look over and take a deep dive into all of the different position groups and their two deeps. We'll at least go two deep on a lot of these. There are some position groups, like offensive line, where it doesn't really matter if you go down all the way to three deep at each one because, well, there's really a pecking order at a place like offensive line. We've gone three deep on quarterback today. That's the most obvious position group of them all, and we'll break it down here. It's more about the backups than maybe the starter. So we're starting with our depth chart prediction series, and we're starting it off with quarterback. And obviously, Bo Nix is going to be the guy who's going to lead the room this year. There have been some people out there who have asked questions about if there's going to be any shakeup at this position. There are two camps right now with Auburn football. There are people who are disgruntled and people who are like, give him a break. And then maybe there's a third camp, and there are people like, well, he hasn't been great, but he's still the guy, and give him a chance, he can develop. Maybe there's people that are, and I think a lot of those folks are in the other camp. They're like, yeah, he's just give him a break, right? So there are two camps, give him a break, or they're disgruntled. And I think a lot of the people that are asking about, well, could we see somebody else? Like, could Grant Lloyd play? Could Demetrius Davis play? I think those people are the people who are a little bit more disgruntled than most about Bo Nix's performances through these 2 years and is blaming him more for his issues at quarterback than maybe we have attributed more to some of the offensive lines, some of the schemes, some of the play calling, some of the coaching development that has surrounded him. The fact that he's had different offensive coordinators each season, different play callers each season. There hasn't really been any continuity for Bo Nix, but I imagine that he is the starter next year, and you shouldn't want anybody else, and it won't change. I think he's going to be the guy all year long.
If you want Grant Lloyd to come in,
bad idea.
Please.
Just I think it's a bad idea for
go home and take a nice nap, drink some water, do something to get that head right, man. Like, you have to.
I don't think anybody wants to see Grant Lloyd. I think people want to see Demetrius Davis play. Even if he's not the starter, I think a lot of people want to see there be packages for Demetrius Davis, which I am also not a fan of. Not because of Demetrius Davis's athleticism or anything about his ability. I think he's got athleticism off the charts. You go and watch his highlights. He's the offensive player of the year from the Touchdown Club of Houston. It's nothing about his skill set. It's that I'm tired of the gimmicks of the Gus Malzahn era.
I can agree with that.
Look at when he was even coordinator in 2011 and Kyle Frazier had packages. Everybody knew what Kyle Frazier was going to do. Those plays were not better decisions than having your regular quarterback in or possibly even handing it off to a running back, right? Like, you would rather hit, if you're going to run the football with the quarterback, I would rather it go to Tank Bigsby or Bo Nix, or I would rather Bo Nix step in and throw. I would not like to see any other gimmicks, because what you've got on that play is not going to be better than what you have with Tank Bigsby or Bo Nix out there on the field. It's just not. He's not ready yet. Just forget about it. Freshmen in this day and age, yes, they can come in and they are, some of them are ready. Some very special freshmen have came in and are ready. Trevor Lawrence is of the world. Justin Fields of the world. Jalen Hurts even was ready out the gates, but he even really wasn't that great of a passer in his first year. This guy's not ready to run the offense yet. And so I don't want to see any more gimmicks in this Auburn offense. I want them to give the reins over to this quarterback. We even saw it in Gus Malzahn as a head coach. There were several times where you would see, players inserted into a position just for one specific play, and they would run that play every single time. And it's like, no, they know what's coming. I want this to be Bo Nix's team moving forward. Obviously, give him a good framework. give him competent route schemes, a good scheme around him offensively, good play calling, continuity, coach him up, give him all the things that he did not have when Gus Malzahn was here. Give him the help he needs from the coaching staff. And also help this offense out, help this offensive line out a little bit, right? It's like, give them some support.
You want to talk about gimmicks. I want to say it was 2016. We were watching the Iron Bowl, and you have a fullback out there running a pass on like 4th and 17. That's the spinner play. That's where you come from. The hating the gimmicks. Those kind of plays right there.
What about the 2018 Iron Bowl where they throw to Anders Carlson out in the flat and he gets laid out?
Yeah. Yeah, you're throwing to a soccer player out in the flats. That's something you don't want to do ever in a game of football. Like, good Lord. I understand your sentiment of tired of the gimmicks because I'm tired of the gimmicks as well, and I know so many Auburn fans are also tired of – and I say the term gimmick lightly because you're not fooling anybody. If I can sit at home, or most average fans can sit at home with, you know, no real football coaching knowledge and can sit there and go, oh, we're about to run this play. You know who else knows that? The coaches and the players on
Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah, Jeremy Pruitt, Kirby Smart. They know that play is coming. If most people who are sitting on the couch can do it, I know the guys who are getting paid millions of dollars
can do it. I say Jeremy Pruitt because in 2018 when Auburn lost to Tennessee at home, there was that video of him yelling out, screen, screen, or whatever it was.
Yep.
I think it was
a screen. Knows.
And he knew exactly what it was, and they were there, and they snuffed it out immediately on that play. Once again, I can't stress enough, this is not a knock on Demetrius Davis's skill set or performance. It shouldn't be a knock to say that a freshman's not ready. If we're making that excuse for Auburn basketball, we have to make that same thing available to a freshman quarterback. Would you rather a guy who's got 2 years of experience be under his belt, or would you rather a freshman quarterback step in with this first lick of experience being in SEC play and having to go to Baton Rouge and then go to Georgia, or excuse me, not to Georgia, you get to host Georgia in his first two games in SEC play. His first major game that he will play outside of, obviously, you know, a scrub game or two early. Then you're going to Happy Valley and playing the Nittany Lions of Penn State on the road. These are not the types of situations you want to put a freshman quarterback in because it can ruin them. It can hurt them. And also, you destroy your quarterback room because then you bench Bo Nix, who I'm just telling you, like right now, the potential's there. The arm talent is there. We've seen the plays. Bo Nix is the right guy. The potential is there. Between the arm talent, the athleticism, the potential is there for a quarterback developer like Mike Bobo, who has had a lot of success that's unquestioned at developing quarterbacks. He can help Nix develop into one of the top SEC quarterbacks in 2021 immediately. They're going to have to help him out with the scheme. They're going to have to give him better route concepts, better pass plays, obviously, than what Gus Malzahn and insert failed offensive coordinator here. They're going to have to give him more help than he's had in his first 2 years. I'm just hoping that we get a more refreshing pass concepts in this offense than what we've been used to seeing up to this point. And I think if he gets it, he's going to be just fine. You can see the potential's there. You can see the talent's there. He's not bad. He just hasn't had a whole lot of help yet. He's at the top of the depth chart. Number two, though, is going to be Demetrius Davis. He's going to be the backup. He will surpass Grant Loy on that depth chart.
Oh, easy. And if we are wrong about, you know, Demetrius Davis being ready, you'll see him. He'll be the guy out there.
That's
starting.
Very true.
I just don't envision that happening. But if we are wrong, you will see him out there. That'll be a thing.
I love that point. And the reason why I love that point is none of these guys were recruited by Brian Harsin. None of these guys are Brian Harsin's boys, right? Like, none of these guys on this chart. They all have something to prove, and that is including Bo Nix. He's got something to improve. He's got to go in there and win this job. Not saying that there's a quarterback battle, but he does have to win his coach's trust. He does not have Brian Harsin's trust. And if you go back and you watch the film, especially in the big games, he wouldn't have my trust, right? I'm not going to sit here and just, you know, sprinkle on, you know, it wasn't Bo Nix's fault. I mean, he did not play well in the big games. He's got a bad record against ranked teams, against good opposition. He does. But he's got to go out and win the trust of his coach, just like a true freshman that was not recruited by his head coach. I mean, he wasn't recruited by him. And now I'm curious to see how this depth chart unfolds over the years and how Harsin evaluates this quarterback room, because they've already gone out for a quarterback. They've already gone out to go in. They tried to go out, too.
Yeah, they tried to get out Gunnar Stockton as well. So, I mean,
I'm curious to see how it unfolds.
It comes down to whoever the coaches think it gives them the best chance to win, that's the guy that's going to be out there. And I think Auburn fans should accept that. I think they should think and look and see what Brian Harsin and Coach Mike Bobo have done with quarterbacks in the past. They're not trotting out bad quarterbacks most of the time throughout their tenure.
No way.
They're trotting out good guys. So if week one comes around and Demetrius Davis is the starter, again,
let's go for it.
I don't think that that's going to happen. I just don't see that happening. If it does, that means he's the guy that this coaching staff believes gives them the best chance to win, and you got to trust it. If that's not the case, if it's very, very clear that's not the case, then Auburn has bigger problems than just quarterback.
If Demetrius Davis wins the job somehow, supersedes Bo Nix, I'm amped.
Of course, yeah, because that means you have a legitimate talent, because I think Bo Nix has potential to be a top five quarterback in the entire college, like in the entire NCAA, based off his talent, if he puts it all together. He hasn't shown us that he can do that yet.
He hasn't shown a completed product at the moment.
Exactly. And I think his ceiling is what we saw out of Mac Jones last year. I think he could do something like Mac Jones did last year if everything is put together for him. I don't think he'll ever hit that, because I don't think he'll ever have the offensive line Mac Jones had, nor the talent around him that Mac Jones had. But he has those similar skill sets that Mac Jones has, and he's more mobile, in my opinion. And that's not saying that Mac Jones is concrete feet or cement shoes. It just means that Bo Nix, pretty mobile guy. I think he can put up similar numbers like Mac Jones did in the right situation if he hits his full potential. That's what
Auburn's
we gotta
offense
see.
Will never provide him the framework to throw for more than 3,000 yards and 36 touchdowns, because 100%, 100%. Alabama's was built around a passing game. Auburn's won't be. Auburn's gonna give the keys to the offense to Tank Bigsby.
Oh, of course.
They're gonna ride. They're all gonna hop on the Sherman, right?
Of course.
And ride that thing through the SEC schedule. So I will say this about Demetrius Davis. I think he's going to get a decent amount of playing time throughout the year.
I
wonder if they limit him to four games to try and get him a red shirt. I wonder if that happens.
I think that would be smart. If Coach Harsin and his staff believes in Demetrius Davis and sees potential through him through the spring and through offseason and through practices, I think that will be the thing. I think you'll see that happen. If you don't see that happen, then that gives me a little bit of hesitation about what they think of this guy moving forward.
I'm excited to see what he looks like throwing the football, though.
I'm ready to see A-Day. I want to see this guy come in and play.
We can see his athleticism and his ability to run the football. I want to know what it looks like against other SEC players throwing the football. And you'll get a vanilla version of that on A-Day, but that's what I want to see. He could have a good game throwing the football, make quick decisions. I want to see what his decision making looks like. Does he make quick decisions? What does his throwing mechanics look like? Those types of things. How does he look in the pocket? Because so much of evaluating quarterbacks, and especially what they do at the next level and what NFL scouts do, and I'm not talking about these guys translating to the NFL or anything, but I'm just saying how you evaluate quarterbacks is how well they throw the ball in the pocket. Now that sounds like common sense, but football at the quarterback position has gotten so far away from that model because of running quarterbacks coming into the equation and offenses like Gus Malzahn's early in the 2010s, building around quarterbacks' running ability. It's kind of gotten away from that. But at the end of the day, the primary way that you evaluate a quarterback is how well do they make throws while standing in the pocket? Because at some point, you're going to run into a good team, and you have to be able to make throws in the pocket. You have to be able to make difficult throws. That's what separates the good teams and the great teams. If you can't make those throws, you're not going to get there at the end of the day to the national championships of the world, to the SEC championships, in college football. That's not going to happen. You have to be able to make those throws. And so I want to see what his decision making looks like going into A-Day. I want to see, what his mechanics look like. How have they already begun to develop him as a quarterback? A lot of it's going to be decision making for me right out the gates. And freshman, I'm not going to grade him too hard or too tough or too harsh or anything, because he is a freshman and he hasn't, been competing at this speed of a game at all yet. So that's not at all. I'm not going to grade him tough or anything like that. It's just I want to see what he looks like as a passer, because we really don't know anything about Demetrius Davis, the college football player. We know all about the accolades of him as a high school football player, but we don't know anything really about him as a college football player. So I'm excited to see him on A-Day and see what he looks like, because there's a lot of excitement about Demetrius Davis, the football player, and his athleticism and his skill set. I mean, he's coming down, I think, as the number 8 quarterback in the country. There's a lot of people who can be pumped up about him coming in, and He just like Bo Nix and everybody else in that room and every other player on this team has to earn his coach's trust. And A-Day is going to be a chance for him to do that, and it's going to be everybody's eyeballs onto these guys for the first time. He's going to have to do it in scrimmages just like everybody else. I mean, it's going to be fun to see some of these guys that we haven't seen yet that have a lot of excitement around them, just like it is every A-Day. And then last on this three-deep depth chart here, I got Grant Loy. I think he edges Chael Garnett. Excuse me, I almost said Garrett. I think he edges quarterbacks Chael Garnett and Sawyer Pate because of the experience.
It's based off just experience alone. Just a guy that you can trust to go in.
He's a four-year college football player.
Trust him to go in and maybe not make the worst decision.
I don't think he plays this year. Unless it's in like the Alabama State game and they're trying to save Demetrius Davis's, you know, red shirt. I think you see Demetrius Davis get all of the garbage time snaps. He gets all of the late game blowout
because you have to.
Snaps
because
100% that guy, for development.
That guy has potential in development. You want to get that guy in. Grant Loy only comes in against Alabama State when you're going through the entire
depth
quarterback
chart. Like when Court Sandberg got in against Samford 2 years ago.
At least Grant Loy is an improvement on Court Sandberg. We can
all
agree on that.
No, we cannot. Everybody loves Sandberg. You're just saying that because you don't like the fact that he wore 24. That's outrageous. Sandberg's going to make a group of five team very happy. He's going to play wherever he transfers. I haven't even seen where he's transferred to, if that's even been put on paper yet. I think he's going to play somewhere next year. That's why he transfers. He wants to play. He wants to have a shot. He's a competitor. I like it. And we hope everybody's enjoying On the Line. We'll be back with more of the show on the other side of this break. You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Levi Fitzwater. Coming up in about 8 minutes, we will have an interview with Vanderbilt 24/7 writer Robbie Weinstein. Talk to us about tonight's Auburn-Vanderbilt game. We'll also go through some of his some of that conversation with him about Derek Mason and what he's bringing to the Auburn Tigers. He's obviously got firsthand experience covering Derek Mason, so you know he'll tell us what kind of guy he's like in the locker room. You know what kind of developer he is. You know what schemes come at Auburn, but also recruiting. He had some great tidbits on recruiting in there, so I'm looking forward to that conversation with Robbie Weinstein. Once again, stick around for that. That's coming up here at 3:30. If you missed any of today's show, make sure you go and find it wherever you get your podcast. Follow Fox Sports Central Alabama on Facebook to keep up with the latest going on in sports. On the Line, The Drive with Bill Cameron, analysis, news, and more, all on Fox Sports Central Alabama on FoxSports983.com and on Facebook. That's FoxSports983.com. Noah Gardner, Levi Fitzwater with you here. Going back to Auburn basketball tonight, taking on Vanderbilt at 7:30 on SEC Network. We've talked a lot about how we think this is going to go. We've gotten into the betting lines a little bit. Auburn favored by 5.5. Interesting tidbit this year. Auburn has only won two of its 10 games this year. Only two of its 10 games have came by a margin less than 5.5 points. So 5 points or less has only happened twice for Auburn in wins. They've either blown teams out, won by about 7 or 8, or they have lost. I think that perfectly describes how I feel about this game. Auburn is either going to lose or they are going to win handily. There is no win close, I think, for Auburn tonight. Vanderbilt has been a graveyard for Auburn basketball over the years, 1-11 over their last 12. This is a must-win for Auburn tonight. They've got to find a way to get two wins out of their last 13. They have to find a way tonight to do that, to really salvage the season. A loss tonight to Vanderbilt probably sticks Auburn with a losing record this year.
100%. If you lose this game tonight, I don't think there is it makes the chances of you having a winning record at the end of the year just so drastically much lower. Like it will be almost impossible for Auburn to come out with a winning record if they drop this one to Vanderbilt. It is just a massive game when you look at what is in front of them and when you look at what this Vanderbilt team is. This Vanderbilt team has not been good. They've been a bottom feeder in the SEC this entire year and has not been consistently great the past 2 years. So you have to win this game, especially looking at you got to go to LSU, to Alabama. You got Florida and Tennessee at home. This game is absolutely massive for Auburn to win if they want to go into next season with just any kind of confidence and potentially come out of this season with a winning record.
Auburn's schedule moving forward is not easy. You're at Kentucky on Saturday at 12 on
CBS.
That one
too. I forgot at Kentucky. And Kentucky's not great this year, but I mean, Auburn at Rupp, that's a boogeyman. Auburn at Rupp has been just nightmarish for Auburn in the past.
Since the beginning of time.
I say, since the wheel was invented, Auburn at Rupp is miserable. When is the last time that we've won at Rupp? Let me check that real quick. You start going through the schedule. I want to find that real quick for myself.
Mississippi State at home, LSU on the road, Florida and Tennessee at home. Tennessee ranked 16th in the country. That's enough time also for Florida to get bad ranked because they're receiving votes right now. And then Alabama on the road to wrap up the season. Alabama this week coming in at 11th. That's another one spot drop for the Crimson Tide in basketball in the AP poll. So the schedule's tough. You're going to be on television for all of those games, obviously, because people love to watch them, some Auburn basketball. And so you're going to get on TV for a lot of those games. And I think Auburn can put up a fight in all of those games. What it's coming down to is Auburn's 10-10 overall right now. Auburn's 10-10 overall. They're 12th in the SEC, and they've got seven games left. Auburn has to go 4-3 over their last seven to finish in the green this year and not the red. For Auburn to finish with a winning record, they have to go 4-3 at least over these next seven. I'm right now more on the side of the spectrum that will not occur. Auburn will beat Vanderbilt tonight, I think. I think Auburn can go into Kentucky on the road on Saturday, and I think they can beat the Wildcats, and they'll be sitting at 12-10. But then I'm wondering over that next five-game stretch if Auburn can go 2-3 over those next five. And I'm having a hard time finding, you know, a lot of it depends on which Florida you get. Because do you get the Florida that just lost to South Carolina, or do you get the Florida that beat West Virginia? Do you get the Tennessee that lost to Ole Miss, or do you get the Tennessee that beat Kansas? Alabama's right now been a little inconsistent. So there's a lot of inconsistency over that last five-game stretch. But I wouldn't say that it's a guarantee that Auburn goes 2-3 over that five-game stretch at the end of the year to wrap it up, even if they were to win their next two games. Like, I cannot stress how must-win tonight is for Auburn basketball if they're going to finish with a winning record, because if you don't beat Vanderbilt,
there's no shot.
Because then you've got to steal two across those final four or five games right there against teams that are better than you. Mississippi State, LSU, Florida, Tennessee, and Alabama are better than you. Just look at the standings. They've been the more consistent team all year long.
And they haven't been very consistent, but they've been more consistent than Auburn, which is crazy. And you have to hope that Florida or Tennessee comes in and plays one of those inconsistent Florida or Tennessee games. But yeah, if you lose to Vanderbilt tonight, I mean, you're thinking you have to win this one. You have to win Mississippi State at home. And then you have to go at Kentucky and win that one to really look at a good shot. And that's not an easy slouch. I mean, Kentucky hasn't been great, but think about throughout Auburn's history. They've only won twice in Lexington. They have only won twice out of 48 attempts. They have won twice, 1988 and 1982. Think about that. We're going to talk a lot about that come the weekend time, come the latter half of the week, and we're going to talk into that Auburn-Kentucky game. That would also be monumentous for Auburn.
Monumentous?
Monumental. There we go. That's a word.
So Lance,
Super Bowl week.
Jaws has given me dramatic, and now you've given me monumentous.
COVID-19. We're all in this together.
I'm going to write these down right now, and we're going to have a word board. And at the end of the year, we'll revisit it. We'll revisit what words have we given you over time that really aren't words that we need to create words. So we're going to write down monumentous. I'm assuming that's just like monumental, but with an O-U-S at the end. And then we are going to write dramastic. I'm a big fan of the word dramastic. That's a fun word. I've used that in just common speech with people since Lance gave that to us last week. Dramastic. So I'm here for that. And monumentous as well.
It's the week after the Super Bowl. I mean, I'm
still haven't recovered.
Yeah, there's just way too much going on. Super Bowl week. I mean, you just got to give me some slack, man.
Later on in the show, we'll really get into it and in a couple of segments, because we're about to speak with Robbie Weinstein. We will get into where Auburn needs to show improvement in this ballgame and how can they, because they're playing subpar competition. Sometimes it's, did the competition make you look good or did you actually look good? And so we'll kind of break down later on in the show what Auburn can do in this game to really take a step forward and kind of get off the floor. More of On the Line on the other side of this break. We got Robbie Weinstein of Vandy 24/7 coming up. You don't want to miss it.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
You are on the line with Noah Gardner on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. And as promised, joining us here on the Line, we've got Robbie Weinstein of Vanderbilt 24/7 with us to talk a little bit about tonight's Auburn-Vanderbilt basketball game, but also get us the lowdown on Derek Mason a little bit and also the new head coach in Nashville, Clark Lee. But before we get into it, Robbie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, guys. This is family in Ohio, getting ready to drive back down to Nashville where it's a lot warmer. Going to be enjoying that, and hopefully some good basketball tonight. Should be high scoring, at least, so it'll be entertaining.
So take me through where this Vanderbilt team is at right now with Jerry Stackhouse struggling here, you know, a couple seasons in now for Stackhouse, 1-7 in conference play, 5-9 overall. Give Auburn fans the scouting report on Vanderbilt going into this ballgame.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely at the bottom of the SEC. I do think they've been playing better basketball over the last few games, the last, like, three games. Their season has really kind of, at the various different times, been taken off the rails a little bit by COVID. A lot of different teams are dealing with that, so I don't think that's really a great excuse. But this is a good offensive team that does not have very good personnel defensively, so similar to Auburn, they shoot a lot of threes, and so I think it's going to be a pretty high-scoring game, like I said. But Vanderbilt's capable. I mean, I think they have a shot to win. Wouldn't pick them to win this game. But at this point, you know, Stackhouse came in, and there just wasn't really a lot on the roster. Like last year, they were playing walk-ons, and they just didn't have a lot of scholarship guys on a team because that guys went to NBA after Bryce Drew left. Guys transferred. And so this is a multi-year rebuild. The team is not as good this season as I thought they would be because they actually have 13 scholarship players who are all eligible this season. But they are very young. Most of the best players are freshmen and sophomores. And so, I mean, I think it's going to take time. I don't really have any, you know, predictions as to how the Stackhouse tenure turns out based on the first 2 years, even though it hasn't really gone well so far. But a lot of it will depend on how they play down the stretch. And so this is a significant game for them. I mean, they've been playing better recently. But Auburn, you know, I mean, I certainly imagine they're going to come into this game very motivated since they've lost three straight.
Both of these teams having a hard time defending their own rim at the moment. Both of these squads right now towards the bottom of the SEC in defending inside the arc. Which of these teams do you think wins the paint battle tonight?
Probably Auburn, honestly. So, I mean, I think, JT Thor is the guy who I like. And then, you know, even Dylan Cardwell, who Vanderbilt recruited. You know, Vandy just doesn't really have anyone like that. They don't – their center position for Vanderbilt is one of the, you know, least productive position groups, I would say, in high major basketball, probably. I think, actually, the guards are pretty decent. I think Dylan Dessou has played really well at power forward and has played some center when he has to. But Vanderbilt has really struggled to get anything out of its centers. Its best center, Quentin Melora Brown, has been on the shelf recently with what appears to be COVID. It hasn't played in a few games. We'll see if he plays tonight. I think it's going to turn into a three-point shooting contest, basically. If Vanderbilt, you know, if Auburn has like a really cold night shooting from three and Vanderbilt shoots the ball well from three, then yeah, Vandy can win. If it's about equal, then I think Auburn has a better overall roster and will probably win. And then obviously if Vandy goes cold and Auburn shoots the ball well, it's going to be a blowout.
Let's switch gears to football then, and let's talk a little bit, before we get to Clark Lee, let's talk about Derek Mason coming to Auburn. You obviously covered him firsthand. Maybe you weren't obviously in the locker room with him when he was doing his thing in his natural habitat, but from your experience of covering Derek Mason, what kind of locker room guy is Auburn getting on the defensive side of the football?
Yeah, I think he could really kill it at this job. I think he is a really good hire for Auburn. There were rumors that South Carolina was looking at him for their defensive coordinator spot, and I was pretty surprised because I thought, frankly, he could do a lot better than that. He was very well liked by the players. A lot of players, it seemed, opted out, for the final game or two after Mason was fired because they were upset about that. And when you talk to recruits, they all love him. Like they love talking to him. He has a lot of charisma and personality. Now that didn't necessarily translate to, you know, being a great speaker for a head coach you know, that's kind of a high bar. Like, you're the face of the program and all that. But I think he's going to really be able to have a lot of success in recruiting. Now, maybe that's not as important for a coordinator as for a position coach. But, you know, I mean, he could be a real weapon for them because he has something to sell now in terms of the football product. Whereas at Vanderbilt, you know, every once in a while they're making a bowl game, but the facilities really need to be upgraded. And Auburn doesn't have that problem in terms of, like, you know, support in terms of dollars or having a, you know, big and very passionate fan base. So I think his personality, like, you know, I think he's got the perfect personality to succeed as, like, a high-level Power 5 defensive coordinator. And I think that's going to show up on the recruiting trail. He's going to be a really good weapon to win some of these battles. And now he has relationships throughout the South now from being at Vanderbilt before he was on the West Coast. And I think he's a great hire, personally.
I don't know how familiar you are with some of the coaches that Auburn has filled out their coaching staff with, and so I want to dig a little bit more here into recruiting on this, because you're talking about Derek Mason recruiting. That was exactly where I was wanting to go with this, because Auburn has filled out its staff with about seven coaches that don't have any ties to the SEC, don't have any ties to the Southeast. Even their own defensive line coach has never recruited before. Nick Eason coming from the NFL. It appears that Derek Mason and Mike Bobo at OC are the two guys that are going to have to spearhead recruiting from a Southeastern connection perspective. You know, what do recruits say about Derek Mason when he was at Vanderbilt and recruiting these guys? Because we really want to dig in and know what kind of recruiter this guy is.
Frequently, what I've heard is they're like, it's like talking to my uncle or my dad. You know, like he, especially for a head coach, I think, you know, previously, I think he did a really good job of being relatable. And so he's got a sense of humor. He's kind of quirky. And I think he's a relatively down to earth guy for like a high level Power 5 coach, who is quite good at establishing genuine relationships with high school kids. And, you know, yeah, like you said, it really helps that if Auburn had been hiring from Stanford, there would have been some fit issues in terms of the recruiting. But Vanderbilt is recruiting, Alabama, Georgia, pretty heavily. And Mason, from what I have heard, has pretty good relationships with local coaches in Nashville as well. So that, you know, certainly helps Auburn, because Nashville is a booming population center with a lot of good recruits, and it's an SEC country, so that is a place that Auburn certainly can have success if they decide they want to dip into that talent base. So he's Mason's kind of a funny guy, and I think he's sort of, you know, a lot of these SEC coaches are kind of high strung and a little bit uptight, I think, and not always the nicest guys, because you got to be cutthroat in this league. But Mason really wasn't. Like, I think he's actually a pretty good person for, like, an SEC head coach or former head coach. And I think that shows up on the recruiting trail. Like, yeah, Vandy's recruiting results weren't amazing with him. But, you know, that doesn't really – how much of that really goes on the head coach? I don't think that much. It was really more about the program in general. So I think recruits are going to like him.
Looking at the X's and O's and the scheme – for Derek Mason, a lot of Auburn fans say that the indication right now for Auburn folks is that this Auburn defense is going through a transition in scheme from 4-3 to a 3-4. What does a prototypical Derek Mason defense look like on an average Saturday?
Yeah, it's kind of evolved over the years. He did come to Vanderbilt with a standard, you know, straight 3-4. But it changed a little bit. I don't know if that was due to his own philosophy or whether that was more of a personnel thing, but like this season it really wasn't a 3-4. Like the depth chart showed up as a 3-4, but one of the outside linebackers was consistently playing with, you know, in a three-point stance. And so it's sort of what they were trying to do late in his tenure was have it be sort of a hybrid between a 3-4 and a 4-3, where there was a fourth player, you know, playing a three-point stance, playing as a down lineman who they could sub in. They could have multiple options there where some of the guys on the roster would be more like defensive ends, like traditional defensive ends, and some would be able to stand up and make more plays, you know, play a little bit more like an outside linebacker. So that's probably what I would expect him to do. I would expect Auburn to look at a lot of, hybrid defensive end, outside linebacker, kind of versatile athlete types. And they can get some good ones. And, you know, they have a little bit more power on the trail, a lot more power on the trail than Vanderbilt did. But I would be a little bit surprised if he goes with a straight 4 or straight 3-4. But, you know, maybe early in his tenure, depending on how Auburn's roster looks, he could do that. But I think long term, he'll probably go with that sort of hybrid mode like I described.
Vanderbilt bringing in Clark Lee, Notre Dame's defensive coordinator this offseason. What's kind of the level of optimism with Clark Lee coming into the program? Obviously, there are recruiting handcuffs around any head coach coming into Vanderbilt, but what's kind of the general what's the kind of general pulse on the Clark Lee hire?
Yeah, it seems like a pretty good hire, right? I mean, he was considered to be one of the top assistant coaches in college football, and there's always going to be risk when you hire somebody who has not been a head coach before. I think even when you hire somebody who has been a head coach, there's usually risk there even too, because, you know, like Brian Harsin, right? Great head coach, done a great job at Boise State, but there are, you know, geographic concerns, I guess. So I think with Lee, you know, maybe the bigger thing than the hire is that Vanderbilt needs to just pour some money into their facilities, and they really need a lot of work in that area. And it seems like, you know, they're open to investing. They're redoing the locker room right now, and they've hinted at a new football facility coming up before too long. They really need to get on that, I think. In terms of Lee himself, it seems like he's made a lot of, you know, good hires to his staff. They're expanding the size of the staff, salary pool. So, you know, whether he becomes a good or great head coach remains to be seen. I think he's saying all the right things. He seems very sharp. He has a plan. He brought in Barton Simmons from 24/7 Sports, my former coworker, which is a really interesting move. So, I mean, I think, you know, there's positive momentum around the program for sure. I think whenever you – there's like almost always positive momentum and positive vibes whenever a program hires a new coach, because the previous coach that was fired obviously didn't do a great job. But, you know, so I think we just got to wait and see. But, you know, the next year or two could be pretty rough. But I think, you know, not a lot of bad signs with Lee so far. I think, you know, he's made some good hires, and that's about all you could ask for.
Going into his first year, it kind of seems like it could possibly be a down SEC East from maybe even what we're used to seeing. You know, Kentucky maybe taking a step back. They're trying to figure out what's going on at quarterback. Tennessee's in a dumpster fire at the moment. South Carolina, likewise. You know, is there a real opportunity for Clark Lee to make a statement right out the gates with bringing back kind of a core of his team, especially a quarterback?
It's crazy. I actually think there is. Like, I don't know that Vanderbilt is really going to be good next season. They'll be better than they were this season, I certainly think. But, you know, they could be closer to the pack in the SEC East because, like you said, I mean, Tennessee, I mean, oh my God, what a mess. that's just a disaster. South Carolina, I think, like you said, could be really, really bad. So, yeah, I don't think Vanderbilt's going to be good, but if the competition isn't any better than you are, then, yeah, you can win some games, right? And at least Vanderbilt does bring back a quarterback who's a promising player in Ken Fields. The staff I know likes him, and I think he had a good freshman season under difficult circumstances. Keon Henry Brooks is a really good all-purpose back who's a rising junior, so he's still pretty young and he's got room to grow. They're bringing back their three starting wide receivers, their starting tight end. So offensively, like, I think they have a chance to surprise some people if they get decent line play. The defense has a lot of, you know, they need to replace some guys for sure. But, hey, you bring in a defensive guru as your head coach. Maybe you can figure something out there. So, you know, I expect them to win like 3 or 4 games. But I do think the upside is there because of how bad the SEC East is, that maybe they could get to 5. I think 6 in a bowl game is really, really pushing it. I do not think they have that roster. But you never know. I mean, like you said, the East is pretty bad. And Mississippi State is one of their crossover opponents in the West. And we don't know how good they're going to be next year either.
Fun question here before we let you get out of here. Baseball season's coming up within 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure how close you cover baseball, but you know what's that Vanderbilt team looking like? Because of course they are yet again, you know, in that top 10 and in that national championship picture in college baseball once again.
Yeah, I mean it's nice to have some variety. Like, I obviously don't care. You know, as a reporter, I don't care if Vanderbilt wins through individual games or what their season ends up being, but it does get a little bit monotonous to just cover loss after loss after loss, right?
Sure.
And you're just kind of writing the same story over and over again for football and basketball, whereas baseball like you said, I mean, I think they're going to be quite good. I think in some ways, some of these polls have them toward the bottom end of the top 10. And I think if that's really what people think, I think they're actually kind of underrated because the pitching staff is just going to be unbelievable. I mean, Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter are projected to be the number one and number two picks in the draft coming up this season. They're going to be very tough to hit. And then they've actually got, you know, they've got three more starters who are probably all going to be first-round picks whenever they do come out. Thomas Schultz could be one this year. Then they've got Ethan Smith, who also could be one this year. And then they got an early enrollee from St. Louis named Christian Little, who was like a top five or top 10 prospect coming out of high school, who reclassified and moved up a year. So we don't know exactly what he's going to give him because he's only 17 years old. But like he could be a top five pick in the draft 2 or 3 years from now or whenever he's eligible. So the question, I guess, is the offense. And, of course, the SEC, you know, is so strong in baseball that the competition is going to be really tough. But, yeah, I mean, they're going to have the best pitching staff in the country. I'm not even sure if it's going to be close.
Robbie, I appreciate you taking the time to hop on with us. Tell everybody where they can find where you're at.
Yeah, head on over to Vandy247.com. I will have live coverage from this game. And, if Auburn gets that win and you're interested in seeing angry Jerry Stackhouse quotes after the game, come on over and I'll have them.
Well, I appreciate it, Robbie. Hope you have a good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
That was Robbie Weinstein of Vanderbilt 24/7. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Line. Wrapping up On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. We got about 4 minutes left in the show, and before we wrap it up here, let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight.
Hey everybody, it's Noah Gardner with What's On Tonight. College basketball gets started with number 11 Alabama at South Carolina at 5:30 on SEC Network. Also at 5:30, but on ACC Network. Syracuse is on the road at NC State. At the 6 p.m. time slot, roll out the struggling Blue Bloods. Penn State at Michigan State on ESPN2 and Arkansas at Kentucky on ESPN. Even Kent State and Bowling Green have better records than Michigan State and Kentucky. And they play at 6 on CBS Sports Network. At 7:30 on SEC Network, Auburn looks to snap a 3-game losing streak at Vanderbilt. At 8, bring out the ranked teams. Number 14, West Virginia at number 7, Texas Tech on ESPN. And number 19, Creighton at Georgetown on CBS Sports Network. Two NBA games are on TNT tonight, starting with the Rockets at the Pelicans at 6:30. At 9, the Celtics and the Jazz wrap up the night. I'm Noah Gardner, and that's what's on TV tonight.
Auburn-Vanderbilt tonight at 7:30 on SEC Network. Noah Gardner, Levi Fitzwater with you here on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. It's official prediction time here, Levi. It's a two-parter here. So first, I want to know, where should Auburn attack Vanderbilt tonight? And then, who is your pick?
I think they should attack them inside. I think they really need to get interior. Guys like Jalen Williams need to get on the inside. I want to see Sharif Cooper getting his at the bucket. Even JT Thor and Dylan Cardwell playing a little bit. I would absolutely, if we come in tomorrow and Dylan Cardwell had just, and I'm
just has just, a 20 piece.
Oh man, you will see me happy because I have been hard on him in terms of criticism of just wanting him to play a little bit more physical. He's a young guy. It'll come. That's not a knock on him. He's just tentative right now in certain aspects because, again, young guy, that happens. I want him to play up to that frame, and if he comes in and plays that, I will be super ecstatic. I'm not a moral victory guy, so if Auburn lost that game and he dropped a 20-piece, I'd still be upset at the team, but I would, I would at least be happy for him. I'd be happy that he took initiative and he just...
So who wins?
I still think Auburn wins. I think Auburn wins by a lot. I think the reason that the line is so close is because Auburn's been abysmal on the road and has had a bad track record at Vanderbilt. This just isn't those Vanderbilt teams. We saw a lot of good Vanderbilt teams throughout the years and sometimes great Vanderbilt teams. This is a bad Vanderbilt team. And that's not saying that Auburn's great right now because they're not. They're not playing great basketball, but I think this is the get-right game. I think this is the game that they come in, they get right, they TCB, take care of business on the road, and they get that W.
You know, you want to talk about two teams that are similar in experience, but also are a little bit different in roster makeup. Auburn's average height at 6'7", which is a pretty long team. Vanderbilt at 6'5", which isn't that great. I think Auburn's going to be able to defend the rim pretty well today, at least from a shot blocking perspective. That's the area that I want to see them improve in. That's the area why I want to see them attack Vanderbilt, is prevent them from scoring down low. Vanderbilt is at 48% in conference play right now in scoring in the paint. If Vanderbilt's, it has a higher percentage from two-point land than 48%, I'm going to be underwhelmed with Auburn's rim protection tonight. It's got to be lower than 48% for me to think that Auburn took a step forward. I think Auburn wins this game. I think they defend the rim well. Two very under-experienced teams, but I do think Auburn goes out there and gets the dub tonight by dominating the paint. We'll see if we're right tomorrow. Be back with us again. The Drive with Bill Cameron follows the show. Stay here on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. You know where to find us.